This is Susan Livingston reporting for Sequitur for the week ending 10 June 2016 for Expressions of Peace, Personal, Powerful, and Heart to Heart. Sequitur is archived under the Expressions of Peace radio tab at panina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in Peace and Nonviolence in Action. With global extreme weather as the organizing principle, Sequitur covers habitat destruction, ecological collapse, and consequent impending extinction as a result of human activity. Sequitur moves from our actions at the individual, community, cultural, and species levels to a place of acceptance of the natural consequences of those actions. Sequitur, it follows. Sequitur, the theme song, is by Zimpht. That's Z-Y-M-P-H-T. You can find more of his music on SoundCloud. Opening this week's show is a work from 2012 in which Zimpht urges us to step into both our power and our responsibility for the world we are co-creating. I'll add excerpts from his program notes as a voiceover during the musical introduction. I give you Be Holder by Zimpht. How is it that we find ourselves in this odd predicament, in this position of immense privilege, in which we are capable of an extraordinary sort of magic that we mostly take for granted? You sense that you are part of the unfolding of an unfathomable becoming. But for now, you are a holder of being. The be holder is you.
The fact of being. The power of feeling. The will to action. Compassion. Expansion. Of impenetrable logic, psychic realms of stars, bathing in fountains of infinite creation. This is the mortal conversation.
That was Beholder by Zimft. We are holders of being. We are jointly and severally responsible, as they say in legalese, for the relationship between our species and the habitat in which it will continue to adapt and evolve, or not. Think Progress reports the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's official carbon dioxide level for the month of May, 407.7 parts per million. This is a record-breaking increase of 3.76 parts per million over May of 2015, and the highest monthly average ever measured. In a blog for the Union of Concerned Scientists, senior climate scientist Brenda Eckwurzel explains that the Omega Block that is ever more frequently embracing Central North America is due to the weakening of the jet stream, which is in turn due to warming in the Arctic. The consequences for human activity and habitat have been covered both in detail and as an overarching theme in previous Sequitur podcasts. Peter Wadhams, head of the Polar Ocean Physics Group at Cambridge University, told the UK Independent he stands by his prediction of 4 years ago for a blue ocean event this year or next. It will be the first time in more than 100,000 years that Arctic ice extent is as low as 1 million square kilometers, which doesn't sound like an ice-free Arctic, but this is not an expanse of ice in the middle of the deepest part of the Arctic Ocean. It is rather a crusty fringe that's trapped around the northern Canadian coastal islands and in the straits and backwaters at the continental shelf. In another example of too little too late from well-intentioned people, TELSER reports that Greenpeace is demanding a ban on extractive industries in the Arctic. Transportation is not an extractive industry. Shipping is not an extractive industry. Tourism is not an extractive industry. ABC reports up to 38 centimeters of rain flooded the Australian provinces of Queensland, New South Wales, and Tasmania. The city of Brisbane was especially hard hit. Nearly 5,000 homes were without power. There were two traffic fatalities as the drivers lost control of their vehicles. 5 people were injured in another traffic accident. Numerous other cars were swept away by rushing floodwaters. According to The Guardian, hundreds of people were issued evacuation orders as the intense low-pressure system with its dangerous flooding moved from Queensland and headed for New South Wales and Tasmania. The king tide that followed the storm eroded up to 15 meters of shoreline, reclaiming beaches, yards, patios, and even a swimming pool or two, as shown in images in the Daily Mail. Mirage News reports that organizers are urging Vivid Sydney patrons to postpone their visits as many of the attractions, especially the light shows, are being shut down as a result of or in anticipation of more severe weather. The festival runs through 18 June. 4 people died and 3 are still missing as a result of flooding in New Zealand, reports ABC. By their silence on climate change in general and the recent flooding in particular, it would seem that incumbent Malcolm Turnbull and the main challenger, Bill Shorten of the Labour Party, are in agreement that issues such as jobs, growth, education, and hospitals are more important, according to the conversation. This is especially surprising in light of recent controversy over corruption in the carbon tax, at a level that has fueled a significant Axe the Tax movement. Multiple polls are showing a shift in public opinion to 63% in favor of the tax, with the most extreme shift among Turnbull's party. But at this shame-drenched time in U.S. electoral history, further comment on my part on party politics is the pot calling the kettle black. And how can it be otherwise when climate scientists are unwilling to connect the dots in public due to possible political repercussions? The Stringer accuses scientists of using their discomfort about policy implications of their findings or upon a journalist taking an interest in their research as a gag order. Quote, some scientists are unwilling to challenge political analysis of the scientific evidence. Fear of being seen as a whistleblower and damaging their career are also reasons why scientists are unwilling to speak out. Close quote. A year ago next Saturday, Pope Francis released his encyclical on climate change, the causative factors of Western privilege, and the consequences in human suffering. During the ensuing year, religious leaders of every flavor have been connecting the dots between climate change and the refugee crisis. According to Mongabe, there are already 1 million refugees and migrants in 28 EU countries. In late May in the Mediterranean Sea, 700 refugees died in overloaded boats. On 2 June, another 85 bodies washed ashore in Libya. Thousands more refugees are expected to stream into Greece and Italy this summer. Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan have absorbed the bulk of close to 5 million Syrian refugees since 2011, but have now severely restricted admissions while doors to Europe are slamming shut. At the Syrian-Jordanian border, 64,000 Syrian refugees are encamped at Azraq, 80 kilometers from the nearest road, where the inadequate humanitarian aid that is available is hard-pressed to reach them. Jordan has taken in about 650,000 refugees and says it has already done more than its share. Germany, France, Belgium, and Romania are all dealing with serious flooding, with at least 14 fatalities, reports Deutsche Welle. EcoWatch puts the count at 18 and includes the Ukraine among the devastated areas. The Seine in Paris reached 6.1 meters. Tens of thousands have fled, and the Louvre closed last Friday in order to evacuate its ground floor treasures. France had its wettest May since 1886, and there was hail on Tuesday in England's Yorkshire Dales. No injuries were reported. Severe storms with lightning and flash flooding caused chaos across the UK on Tuesday, as a month's worth of rain fell in just an hour, reports The Telegraph. A man and his 5-year-old son were critically injured, and his 7-year-old daughter was seriously injured by lightning during a school sports day in Northern Ireland. And in southern London, the Theatre Royal in Windsor was evacuated in mid-performance when floodwaters reached the front rows of the orchestra section. Joshua Lehmann of Germany's Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research is lead author of a recent paper that describes 3 100-year flooding events in Germany since 1997. Say what? Archie World News hastens to point out that Stefan Ramsdorf of that same institute predicted this scenario 10 years ago. The final day of a 3-day outdoor music festival was canceled with the threat of more severe weather after more than 70 people required hospitalization due to being struck by lightning or flying debris last Friday. The European Environment Agency finds that as many as 1/3 of urban residents are exposed to unhealthy air pollution levels, reports Euronews. Stricter laws are expected out of Brussels, as many EU countries, including the UK, have exceeded recommended emissions limits. The final day of the 4-day mountain jam at Hunter Mountain, New York, has been canceled due to extreme weather alerts, reports Time Warner. Organizers offered refunds for some ticket holders and evacuated participants. 5 soldiers died in Fort Hood, Texas, when their vehicle overturned in a flood. The Brazos River reached a record 16.5 meters last Wednesday, reports ABC News. Wonderground is describing the extreme heat in the Pacific Northwest as dangerous, since even wealthy people don't normally have air conditioning in that region. Not only are daytime temperatures approaching 37°C, but nighttime lows are as high as 26°C. Rivers are higher and colder than normal due to premature snowmelt. KGW reports that Portland's high temperature records were broken both Saturday and Sunday last weekend, but predicts no more extreme heat for the remainder of this month. In Phoenix, the 1990 45°C high temperature record was broken last Friday, reports 12 News. While Phoenix is no stranger to such temperatures, it was early in the year for such extreme heat. A 3-day heat wave culminated Saturday in a brush fire in Southern California that may have been started when a truck collided with a power pole, reports the Los Angeles Times. That only one home was damaged with more than 500 acres burned is attributed to aggressive brush clearing by area residents. The temperature difference between California's Central Valley and the canyons farther inland, just a couple hours' drive to the east, can be as much as 26 C, reports the San Luis Obispo Tribune. Altitude also makes a difference. The record, possibly the world record, for extreme temperature gradients goes to Alaska's Mount McKinley, where on an afternoon in 1981, with a high temperature of 26.6 C, that's 80 F, the temperature plummeted to minus 53.8 C when a storm blew in. That's 65 Fahrenheit degrees below zero. That's awesome power. According to the Weather Network, Alberta's senior wildfire manager, Chad Morrison, is seriously considering attributing the Fort Murray fire to human causes since there were no reports of lightning in the region. The flames were around 56% contained as of late Saturday afternoon. Some 2,100 firefighters continue to battle the blaze, backed up by 80 helicopters and more than 200 pieces of heavy equipment. Canadian Minister of Environment and Sustainable Development Julie Gelfand's spring report lists 5 actions for handling extreme weather, reports the Hamilton Spectator. 1. Public Safety Canada should develop guidelines and standards for mapping floodplains or areas vulnerable to high waters. The department agreed and is working to develop a national perspective on flood mapping. Say what? Guidelines? Standards? A national perspective? The insurance companies have had all the demographic and actuarial information at their fingertips for decades and update their maps and charts with every claim that's filed. 2. Public Safety Canada should consult decision makers to help them better understand the information they need for risk reduction efforts. The department agreed. I think they need to stop giving out building permits when they don't even understand the information they need, never mind having the necessary information at hand. 3. Public Safety Canada and other departments should examine the federal government's mitigation programs to help provinces and territories invest in projects that can soften the impact of disasters. The department agreed. Duh. How nice of the department to agree to its chartered purpose. 4. Environment Canada should consult decision makers to clarify how intensity, duration, frequency curves should be produced. These curves look at the probability of extreme weather events. The department agreed to do so. Beware the passive voice. Curves should be produced by whom? Who's producing these curves? And curves don't look at probabilities. Is anybody looking at these curves once they are produced? 5. The National Research Council should factor climate change trends into the structural design provisions of the National Building Code to look at the expected increase in frequency and severity of storms that can affect homes, offices, and other structures. The agency says it will do so. Yes, and local building codes should be enforced regardless of the property owner or permit applicant's level of insurance coverage or potential contribution to the tax base. In a recent interview with the Eco Report, Simon Fraser University climate scientist Kirsten Zickfeld described Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's idea of fighting climate change while expanding the oil sands and building new pipelines as delusional, reports Clean Technica. Editor Ross Hales of the Eco Report website, quote, dedicated to exploring how our lifestyle choices and technologies affect the west coast of North America, unquote, interviewed 3 each of environmentalists, scientists, government officials, and politicians from the Canadian provinces of British Columbia and Alberta. Here are some key findings. 1. Everyone agreed that extreme weather events associated with climate change are getting worse and that actions must be taken to combat it. 2. Though everyone agrees we are burning up the world's biomass, no one endorsed the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences study that suggests close to 50% of burnable biomass is gone. 3. All three scientists said the average global temperature rise is close to 1.5 C already and may cross that threshold this year. 4. The government spokesperson said we can continue to expand fossil fuel infrastructure and keep the global temperature rise under 2 C. Yeah, right. 5. Some respondents said that some fossil fuel development is possible as long as it fits within overreaching objectives of a climate action plan, of which there is none. Others, including all three scientists, disagree. Quote, it makes no sense at all to invest in new fossil fuel infrastructure, close quote. 7. Many of the respondents believe we will not be able to hold global warming under the 2C threshold. The most commonly cited reason is lack of a clear plan with a set of targets and accountability mechanisms. SciDev reports Cyclone Roanoke statistics from Sri Lanka as of May 26. 104 dead, 99 still missing, 5,000 homes destroyed or damaged, more than 300,000 people internally displaced. In a country with 114 cell phone subscriptions per 100 population, and trivial unsolicited text messages from the government being issued regularly, for example, holiday greetings, it is more than odd that the Disaster Management Center must rely on megaphones and loudspeakers to broadcast a severe weather threat. Philippine Senator Lauren Legarda, chair of the Senate Committee on Climate Change, points out the hypocrisy of promising to reduce carbon emissions while granting 21 permits for coal-fired power plants in the past 5 years, reports the Philippine Star. Bird flu has been reported at Hong Kong's Cheung Sha Wan market and may result in a 3-week suspension. About 79,000 chickens were culled in response to the outbreak in December 2014 to January 2015. Rain has returned to Costa Rica, but more than 150,000 Costa Ricans will be on water rationing for another 2 weeks after facing daily water rationing since September, reports the Tico Times. The Peru news agency Andina celebrates the outcome of a 10-year international collaboration. A new long-term weather and climate change prediction technology. Quote, climate prediction and seasonal forecasting can prepare economies for climate events that could impact their populations. Close quote. Say what? It does not say that prediction and forecasting can prepare populations and their economies. It really does say that it's the economies that are being prepared. It's clear from the use of the possessive pronoun there that the populations belong to the economies, not the other way around. In Mumbai, India, air pollution and solid waste and sewage management are higher priorities than extreme heat and sea level rise, according to a study published in Environmental and Science Policy, reports the Hindustan Times. According to T.V. Ramachandra of the Center for Ecological Sciences at the Indian Institute of Science in Bengaluru, the net loss in vegetation in Mumbai over 4 decades stood at 62.79%, and, quote, that 62.79% in 2009 has easily gone up to about 80% today. It's the citizens that have to pay the price for such senseless growth in metros undertaken by policymakers that ultimately results in extreme weather events such as heat and flooding, close quote. In addition, wider-scale land use analysis indicated a decrease in vegetation by 20% with a 155% increase in built-up area during the same period. The Asian Development Bank approved a $100 million loan to help fortify Indian irrigation and water management systems, reports UPI. One person was killed as the monsoon arrived on Wednesday at the southern tip of the subcontinent, a full week after its expected onset, reports the Indian Tribune. Heavier-than-average predicted rainfall amounts, coupled with a later-than-average onset, predict an increase in landslide activity this season, as the deluge overwhelms parched, brittle soil. The monsoon is expected to soak the entire region by the beginning of next month. For the first time in history, the India Times is predicting a modest energy surplus for fiscal 2017, which still means significant shortages in remote areas and urban slums. According to the Environment Ministry's 2015 Forest Survey of India report, India has lost 2,511 square kilometers of forest to fires and illegal logging since 2013. Drought conditions are perfect for setting forests ablaze, whether by timber smugglers hoping to cover their tracks, by poachers looking to drive out animals, or by farmers hoping to clear new ground for crops or cattle. Along with Reuters, I have to wonder how they intend to increase forest sequestration of carbon by up to 3 billion tons, as they promised in Paris, under such circumstances. Edward Mabaya of Zimbabwe reports that only 30% of African smallhold farmers are taking advantage of the new climate-smart seeds that have been produced by public research institutions and commercialized by small, locally owned seed companies without using GMO technologies. These include 200 varieties of drought-resistant maize, rice that can tolerate being submerged for up to 2 weeks, and 450 bean varieties that produce up to 60% higher yields. In Tanzania, traditional grain storage methods are found inadequate as infection by rot and infestation by rodents destroy what should have been an abundant harvest, reports Euronews. Since 2012, grain trade policies under the East African Community Customs Union have made it easier for farmers to sell their produce to nearby countries, Kenya, for example, thus reducing the need for long-term storage on the one hand, and reducing the demand on overstretched and inadequate humanitarian aid on the other. At least 15 people were killed, while another 125 were injured on Wednesday night in a powerful storm that completely escaped the forecasting skills of local climatologists, reports the Pakistan Daily Times. Wind speeds were up to 120 kilometers per hour, trees were uprooted, cars were swept away, and power lines were downed. The forecast called for rain but made no mention of major storm activity with damaging winds. Allocations to upgrade outdated radar equipment are inadequate or missing in the newly released federal budget. City AM reports that sugar prices have reached a 2-year high as supply plummets in Thailand and Southeast Asia due to El Nino. In addition to recommending cover cropping, reduced tillage, and use of manure for fertilizer, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Research Service has developed a test to determine the ideal timing for the application of nitrogen fertilizer so that it benefits the crops without escaping into the air where it is converted to nitrous oxide, a greenhouse gas. The service has also discovered soil bacteria that can nearly eliminate invasive grasses within 5 years without harming local cereal crops or native grasses. The Environmental Protection Agency has already registered one species as a natural herbicide. Writing for the Detroit News, Mark Perry explains that a carbon capture and storage technology developed by a partnership between ExxonMobil and Fuel Cell Energy of Danbury, Connecticut, might be the best way to face the reality that, like it or not, fossil fuel use by emerging economies such as China and India is going to increase, not decrease, for the immediate future. Quote, fossil fuels account for 81% of global energy supply, and based on the latest projections by the U.S. Energy Information Administration, they will still provide 78% of the world's energy in 2040, unquote. U.S. insurance companies have nearly $500 billion invested in fossil fuel energy, reports the Insurance Journal. At a conference at the University of Washington last Wednesday titled Break in the Ice, Climate Risk and the Insurance Industry, divestiture was the most controversial topic. Also on the agenda were creating products to deal with climate change and helping the world better understand risk. Since 2005, U.S. taxpayers have spent $300 billion on disaster recovery. In the report published by the conference, the industry encourages states and communities to adopt stricter land use measures and strong building codes to support research and incentives such as tax credits, loans, and grants to promote loss mitigation, to share science-based information to better inform decision-making, and to evaluate risks related to climate activity. Alex Kaplan of Swiss Re even said people in boom towns like Shanghai, quote, are going to have to own their risk, unquote. I'll second that. The World Socialist website discussed the relationship between El Niño and global warming and concluded that although El Niño is a natural occurrence, global warming makes it happen more often and last longer than it would otherwise. Jeff Knight from the Met Office Hadley Center stated earlier this year that, quote, the contributions of the current El Niño and wind patterns are relatively small compared to the anthropogenically driven increase in global temperature since pre-industrial times, unquote. And here is where I part ways with the scientists. I don't dispute their findings. I ask instead why their findings are important. El Niño versus climate change, human-caused versus naturally occurring. What difference does it make? These are straw-man distractions from the naked fact that people are dying and habitats are becoming uninhabitable while we debate who's right, who's wrong, and who deserves what, and invest our carbon tax dividend in so-called green energy and oxymoronic sustainable growth. Thanks for following Sequitur on Expressions of Peace Radio, archived at panina.org. Until next time, this is Susan Livingston.
Connects us is one.